Welcome back. This is the Coaches Rising podcast. And this was a very moving and deeply inspiring conversation. I'm joined today by Elena Tokolina and Vitas Butunas and Dana Carman. Elena and Vitas both live in the Ukraine, and they're both coaches. And Dana is friends with them both and has been visiting them both in the Ukraine several times recently in the recent years. And so what we're going to unpack today, I think, has just so many lessons for all of us, because we're going to hear the incredible story, the incredible resilience and creativity of the Ukrainian people as they respond to what's happening. And there's some very powerful lessons. We're going to explore for Elena and Vitas in particular, you know, what really stuck from all the spiritual practice they've been doing. You know, when the rubber meets the road and we face crisis, what really mattered? And we will explore what kind of coaching is still happening in the Ukraine. How has it changed Elena and Vitas's view on what kind of coaching matters in our times? And what kind of practices really count? And you'll hear some incredible stories of how the Ukrainian people and Elena and Vitas have responded, and the insights of Dana as he's been out there to visit these extraordinary people. And I think, for me, whilst few of us are living through conditions as extreme as war, we are entering a world now which has greater instability and nervous system strain and uncertainty. And so it was deeply inspiring to me to hear of how people have responded, and the gratitude and the inspiration and the happiness that's and the deep meaning that has arisen in response to the conditions they're facing. I think there's lessons for us all. Just a few more words about the guests. So Elena is a coach bridging developmental, somatic, and leadership work. She works also with cultivating leadership. And Vitas is an integral master coach working with leaders inside the Ukraine, coaching and doing organizational development. Dana Carman has been a guest on the podcast a couple of times. He is a senior leadership coach doing deep leadership transformation and organizational development with organizations around the globe. So let's dive in. Let's get to the conversation that really matters now. Enjoy. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Okay, so Elena, Vitas, and Dana, I'm really delighted to be joined by you three, and excited is maybe not the right word, but moved for the conversation we can have. And Vitas and Elena, you both live in Ukraine, and you work as coaches as well, and you know Dana, and we're going to talk about how you know Dana. So in our conversation today, we're going to explore what life is like in Ukraine and how what the experience is like for you personally. Like, how have you grown? What are you noticing? I was very moved, Vitas, to listen to you speak in the Deep Transformation podcast about some of the things you're experiencing. So, but first of all, maybe we could just invite each of you to say a few words about who you are and what you do, and we'll just move around. Elena, why don't you go first, and then Vitas, and then Dana?
Thank you, Joel. Delighted to be here with all of you. And it's not the first time I speak about Ukraine, but in this context, but it's the first time since 2024. So I'm also like on the tip of my toes, like how this conversation will evolve. I'm a coach and a consultant. I work with organizations in their development, and I'm also a facilitator and somatic coach. So I combine all of those realities, part of my work is also aimed at adult development through Scandinavian Bildung. It's a model which helps to create truly democratic and proactive societies like Denmark or Sweden. And we have an NGO here in Ukraine, which is helping this concept to take roots in Ukraine. I'm also part of a global community of coaches called Cultivating Leadership. It's a company which is focusing on complexity and adult development. So that's me.
Yeah, thank you, Joel, for creating this space. Very much delighted to be here. And thank you, Dana, for initiating this call. My name is Vitas. This is a short version of my name. Professionally, I'm a leadership development consultant and facilitator. I have my own practice. And in terms of my coaching identity, I'm an Integral Master Coach, trained by Integral Coaching Canada. And I work in this field professionally, focused as a coach for the last 9 years. Before that, I spent 20 years in banking, so nobody's perfect. And most of that, I was in managerial roles. And this interest in leadership development, it grew and developed very naturally. By birth, I'm a Lithuanian, so I'm coming from a small Baltic country, not far from here. But by choice, I'm Ukrainian, and half of my family is Ukrainian. My wife and our youngest son is Ukrainian. So this is kind of my double identity, and this second Ukrainian identity at the moment, or even during the last years, is more important. And hopefully we will unpack this during our conversation. And I live in Ukraine for the last 11 years.
I'm Dana Carman. I'm an American living in Ireland for the last 3 years. Some of you who know me, who've seen me on the program, my face is a little crooked right now. I'm in the process of, I just had a tumor removed, and I'm going through radiation treatments, and my face is a little strange for those who see this on video. And professionally, If I were to give you the simple version, have been a I would say I'm a thriving in complexity coach and facilitator. And I'm grounded in the work that I do is embodied. It's individual and collective. It brings clients into the natural world to discover their deeper nature, and it's trauma informed. And I've been doing this for a long time, and have also done a lot of development of coaches. I can say more about my relationship with Zitas and Elena, but I'll stop there.
Well, actually, I think that is a good place to start because, how come you know Elena and Vitas, Dana?
Well, Vitas's wife, Katya, came to a program at the Institute of Coaching in St. Petersburg in 2010 that Jesse McKay and I went to Russia a dozen times between 2010 and 2019 or 2020. And Katya was in the first program. And about a year later, must in 2011, Vitas, with Institute of Coaching, I brought a group of Ukrainians, Lithuanians, and Russians coaches on an integral journey to the US. And we did all kinds of wild and fun things. And I met Vitas. The first thing we did was shadow work together in the canyons of New Mexico. And he wasn't very open to it, to be honest. But
Don't start the.
he got more open over the years. And Vitas and Katya became dear friends. I visited them right after the Maidan Revolution in Kiev, in their home in Kyiv in 2015. I guess they had just gotten there the year Vitas had just moved there very recently. It was very
Okay.
moving to be there. And we've just stayed in close touch. And last year I did a pro well, last year I stayed with them again with a group called Emerge, who came to Ukraine to see the world through the eyes of U the Ukrainian eyes and being in a time of war. And Elena and I, and Vitas, but Elena and I, and a Lithuanian woman named Irina, how would you pronounce Irina's last name?
Blaževiče. So these are two surnames.
Anyway, Elena and Irina and I led a program together in Lithuania for Ukrainian leaders. So we went away, and Vitas was generous enough to be a participant in the program, but he also was really there, kind of holding the space while he was going through it himself. The three of us in Irina, we drove 2 days to Kyiv after the program, but we did a we our program was a nature-based trauma-informed retreat to hold a deep healing space in a time of war, so that people's nervous systems could co-regulate, that the frozen energy that was stuck from these leaders holding other people, that they could be held. And it was a very moving experience. And then going there and spending time with Vitas and Katya and Elena and others in Kyiv while bombs were, and drones were falling was very life transforming to me. And so I left that experience, and I left, out of my relationships with the people, with Ukrainians, I left feeling deeply Ukrainian. And my grandparents are Ukrainian and Lithuanian, but as a citizen in the world, the very first thing every morning is I look to see what happened in Ukraine, and I look to and I pray, and I'm inspired, and I look to see what I can do to support those who are supporting the freedom of Europe and the rest of the world, the rest of the democratic world.
Thank you for your support, Dave.
Well, we might kind of zoom into some of the things you mentioned there, Dana, a bit later in our conversation, but I'd love to, Elena and Vitas, come back to you both. And before we explore, how what's unfolding in Ukraine may be impacting you and others around you in terms of, well, we explore often in this podcast how we grow and transform. I'm just wondering if you could say something about what life is like in the Ukraine at the moment. Like, what's it like, and how are people being in that?
You want to
So
start,
maybe,
Vitas?
yes, I'd actually, I'm looking through the window and it's a sunny day and it's plus 14 degrees Celsius, which is, a real spring. And it's so important for us. And this is probably the first time in my 50 years that I experience spring so as such a powerful event in my life. Because we went through this winter, and that was a literally survival winter. It was an existential survive because Putin was bombing our electric generating plants and all utilities and infrastructure just to freeze people here. And we went through that. So basically, he did not reach a thing and achieve nothing. And now there's this real sense of new life. The new cycle is beginning, and our connection with, as much as I speak with our friends and community, our connection with nature, when being in this warm, weather and sun is completely different from anything we experienced before. So basically, there's a sense of that we went through, and of course, the war is going on, and it's a mess. At the same time, there's some sense of that we have bumped from the bottom.
You want to add any? Yeah, Elena, just feel free to.
Vitas, thank you for sharing that, that there is spring and there is hope and connection to nature. Because I had to leave, not permanently, but for a while, for a few weeks. I had to leave Ukraine in the middle of this disaster. And exactly my thoughts, like, this is a survival game. We have to go through this. There were no thoughts of going out to the streets and marching against, continuing to resist. It was more internal, threshold. I have to go through this, together with the other Ukrainians, because we have to. We don't have other choice but to live through this horrible, horrible winter. And I know that it was horrible primarily for big cities like Kyiv and Odessa, but I was also aware that our men and women have been going through that kind of danger and deprivation of basic utilities, etc., on the front lines, but also the frontline cities who were under complete shellings and bombings all the time. They didn't have access to water or heating, etc. It's just that the big cities were trapped this winter, but smaller cities were suffering from that even earlier. I have to be honest, I had to leave 3.5 weeks ago from Kyiv after spending 2 weeks in Zaporizhia, which is even closer to the front lines. Basically, the front line has moved like 20 kilometers to this home, my hometown, where my parents and my brother and his family still live. I had to take care of my parents, etc. And it was an interesting situation where I felt safer and more resilient in Zaporizhia, although there were drones even during daytime, which is an unusual situation for Kyiv. Usually they come for us at night, but they had heating, so I could go on this basic level. I know that it might sound really weird for someone who doesn't experience that, but as soon as you have those basic things and you can kind of take care of yourself in a normal way until the next attack comes. It gives you more resilience and more strength than this deprivation, which was in Kyiv, like no heating, sometimes no water, and barely any electricity. I don't know how, what about you, Vitas, but I have like in the last few weeks, I had probably 4 hours of electricity per day.
There were some days with 2 hours of
Yeah.
electricity, and yeah. So I'd like to drop in one super important thing. I think this theme must be in our conversation pretty early. The sense of gratefulness and the experience of gratefulness. So one of the key lessons of this war for us and for most of Ukrainians is this paradigm shift that you start really appreciating and valuing so many simple things that we usually take as normal or take for granted. So for example, okay, starting from the biggest one, so peace. Peace is not normal. It's an anomaly. It's a miracle. So war is normal, unfortunately, for the human nature and we experience that as sad as I am to speak about it. So, but going to simple things like electricity is not normal. It's a miracle. Water at home is a miracle. Heating is a miracle. Having your house intact, having a roof above your head is a miracle. So basically we start appreciating so many simple things and this enriches our lives in so many ways. So I'll stop here because it's so much more to unpack.
Well, I'd love to invite you to share more about that. And I can imagine also it, as you know, as you've both been saying, there's just real devastation and hardship. But I think people will find that maybe, well, I, at least I found that very touching. And I find it touching now to hear of the gratitude that you feel for the simple things, and that, in the West, and I think we've lost touch with that a lot, and we have so much, yet so many people feel lost or depressed, And so, could you say more about, what the conditions are bringing out in you and in the culture and how people are being together?
Elena,
I
will you
don't
start?
even know where to start. Shall I start with those DJ raves, which people were putting up in the most harsh days of this winter, like minus 20 in Kyiv, and people are getting together. And those DJs, they started just doing it every Sunday in different locations so that people, not just young people, anybody could join and dance this out of themselves. That's one of the examples. Another example is, I'm sure you have it too, Vitas. When the electricity, we have a schedule and the shifts where we will get electricity in our house. But after the most severe attacks in February and January, the schedule stopped working. So we never knew when the electricity will come. Guess what? It creates this uncertainty, which is permanent. You just don't know. And you mentioned Western civilization. Guys, we have no idea how much we rely on this way of life. Yeah, I mean, it's a great idea to go out into the nature and go through some retreat, I don't know, going out, stepping out of your boundaries. But imagine 50, no, we're not 50 right now, 30 plus million people put into this retreat permanently. Survival retreat. You don't know when the electricity will come. And the water might stop running. All you can predict is if there is another attack, and if you read in your Telegram channel or whatever the news that they are trying to heat heating stations, you might start thinking that there might not be heating or water or electricity, etc. That's all the predictability that you have. And, our cities were not built for that kind of survival. They're not. You can't put up a fire in your apartment. Not possible. So you have to get creative. And this is where you stop waiting. Well, basically, Ukrainians learned to stop waiting for an authority to come and solve your problems since 2013, 2014. But the challenges of 2022 plus have put us into a situation where we don't wait for anybody to come and solve our problems. And we create immediately those decentralized networks where we share information and we start helping out people. Like before I left and after I left for this mini vacation from no heating, no water, no electricity, I was helping a friend whose mother is in Odessa. That friend cannot access Ukraine to multiple reasons. And I found another friend who went to visit this aged lady who also sits in Odessa without electricity and get her power banks and all of those things. It's just a small example, but believe me, there is more. And it's on an ongoing, permanent basis, Peter.
Yeah, and it's so natural, kind of everything you're telling. For me, it sounds so natural. That's what we do here. It's not a, it's not something to be admired. It's like it's natural, and it's super super pleasant to realize that there are so many examples of this horizontal support that people just they those who have batteries. For example, I have batteries in my apartment. Invested some money into that, so basically we can survive for some more hours after we get, cut off from the grid. And for example, we accepted some friends, so some friend li lived at our place while their apartments were frozen to zero or even below zero. And this kind of support, some people are even taking the cables from their apartments and putting them in the staircase corridors, so that other people can come and charge their phones. And so many these kinds of examples. And there are those resilient points of resilience, how to call them, the that
Point
in
points of
the
resilience.
yeah in the districts that are frozen, they create the kind of military style tent, which has like thermal isolated tents with heating, so that people can come there and find food, find even electricity, of course, with generators, and some people were even sleeping there. So these kind of voluntary initiatives, both institutional and structured, and very spontaneous. They are being born every day out of nothing, and people are really connected. There's this one of the sources of Ukrainian resilience is this horizontal, not even network, but I would call it mesh work, with some centers in it, and that's what I deeply admire, and I would call it practical spirituality. This is not a kind of spirit, okay, let's meditate and let's go for a retreat and let's dig what kind of shit have I not discovered yet from my childhood, but the real, okay, I'm not appreciating the psychotherapeutic work, but I just bumped into one, by the way. I s just recently saw a book, which name is "We've Had 100 Years of Psychotherapy, and the World's Getting Worse." So for me, it resonated so much. And then I saw that this book was published in 1991. So basically, this was the most optimistic point in our recent history, when approximately that time Fukuyama wrote his End of History, and we thought that yeah, that's it, the democratic liberal system has won the race, and now we are reflecting on these kind of things a lot, and basically this experience has helped us reinvent spirituality in some sense. And of course, we are all engaged in some different spiritual practices, but we do not try to hide in them here, kind of, because spirituality has become very practical, very actionable, and not the place to hide from our discomfort, from our, inner and outer problems, and so on. So basically, it's bound in action, it's bound in decisiveness, and even in fight if necessary. So there's no, I don't see any conflict between fight and spirituality.
Yeah, it's really beautifully said, Vitas, because this is what I have experienced, particularly my last trip to Ukraine. As coaches, right? We think about trauma-informed coaching or leadership, like a credential or a course that we did. This is how we ha how I s the people we were to get with in Ukraine, including you two. It isn't. It's like something that's a, we need to be able to live a good life. And one of the things I experienced in Ukraine is that Ukrainians' brilliance and revenge is to love their lives. And so when there are drones coming, it's like, how do we begin to normalize that? And then let's just, and then there's a calming and a self-regulating without with each other, looking out for each other without making a big thing of it. It's also the conditions that these guys are describing are is also the conditions for extraordinary innovation, right? So you can see that I just read today in the papers that when Zelensky offered to teach the US how to work with Iranian Shahed drones, the US, oh no, we don't need that. And now, 1 week into this shit show that's happening, there are Ukrainians there helping the United States, while the United States is bombing and the pre and, which is making it good for for Russian oil. Anyway, not to go that wide right now, but I guess what I wanted to underline was, like Elena is extraordinary. I've seen her in and worked with her in groups, holding someone in their trauma, but it's also who she is, and it's how people become, because you need to be in order to be present for your children, in order to be there for each other. And then the last piece, I just reflect as an American, where we start, you started the question. As somebody who grew up in America, we took, I and my generation took living in a free society, in a safe society, as not something you have to work for. We took it as a given that democracy, that this people would do the right things and follow the rule of law. I feel so sobered by the state of the world. And in Ukraine, people are fighting not just for their future, but they're the front lines fighting for the rest of the Western world, for those in the Western world who are still holding democracy as a value in the face of everything that's happening right now. It's incredibly moving to me to connect with Ukrainians.
Yeah, thank you, Dana. I'd love to ask about what you're sharing about how people are responding and reinventing spirituality. I notice that in my journey, there was a kind of like total emphasis on inner work, especially earlier on, ignoring like how it practically lives in the outer world, or somehow seeming that like the inner is separate from the outer. And I just hear in the way you speak about this, about what it's like in the Ukraine, that that's just completely not possible. Like everything has to be practical, but it's a response to everything that's unfolding. So the other thing is I wonder about sometimes in our field, yeah, we're all coaches, and I've said, hey, coaches can play an important role in our times. And, I've been in my own spiritual journey, but I've looked around and I've said, what impact are we actually having as coaches, or what impact is the spiritual community actually having in the world? Are we a little bit over enamored, like with the inner journey, so to speak? Now, I'm saying it because I love that work, but what I come to is like how you view that now. How do you see this? I hear you speaking to like when the shit hits the fan, then you find out like. And people, I'm hearing people are responding in these incredibly beautiful, creative, innovative ways. So I just wondered if you could speak to a bit more to, what you're learning about being in Ukraine, how it impacts your growth and stuff. Yeah.
Such
Fair
a
enough.
huge question and juicy topic. Where shall I start? Great question, Joel. I was one of those that you just described, fascinated by the inner journey. Yeah, this is nodding. I was all pro. I was going to retreats. I was doing spiritual work in something which is called Transfigurity and other things too. Meditations. What else can I do to grow inside of me? I considered myself to be a man of the world, woman of the world, like no boundaries, there's global love and friendship, and we're growing to Vitas help me out the layers of teal and beyond, all of that.
Third tier.
I was shocked to see how all of that scaffolding crumbled, fell in February 2022. And I didn't know how to stitch those two realities together, but I didn't question why it fell. It was so clear to me, like, there is no place for individual paths only in something so huge, so devastating as this big war, as we call it, full-scale invasion. You can't survive on your own. This idea of a lonely warrior on a spiritual path to wisdom beyond wisdom, it just collapses when you are in the middle of this disaster like that. And through my relationship with colleagues across the world, I had a chance to speak about situations of crisis in different other contexts. I have friends from the Middle East who say the same, and people in New Zealand or Australia who suffer from fires or earthquakes, they stay the same. Whether it's a natural disaster or a man-made disaster, you have to work as a team. It's just that our team is huge, multiple millions of people who joined as one to resist this ultimate danger. Basically, they want to erase us as a nation. We might not die fully as human beings, the flesh will survive, but they will want to kill our identities. What you, well, you call it democracy. I would say it's just the way of life where you have the freedom to actually choose your inner journey, because in the country which is our aggressor now, they just can't do it fully or at all. I will not go into that in that sphere. So we have I will get back to myself. I started questioning whether I should just persist living in this newly found inner journey, which became just a collective journey. And I remember in 2022, I left. I went to Denmark into a safety of Copenhagen, thanks to a friend who is a colleague now. His name is Nikolai Tillich, and I'm super thankful to him for that. And Lena Rachel Anderson, who also invited me there. And then I came back to Ukraine, and it felt like a sacred journey to me just to touch this land. And then I remember that in those couple of weeks that I tried to orient myself, can I stay? Should I leave? What's happening here? There are sirens, but there are no bombs. It was summer 2022. Now it's different. There are bombs. So in those couple of weeks, I felt like, oh, I should go and visit this retreat place where I used to stay for a week or two over multiple summers. And I went there, and the guys who hold the retreat space, they were there, and I was so surprised. Like, you didn't leave, you didn't go to elsewhere because you have communities in Germany and Spain. And they said, the spiritual journey is happening here. This is the land of the spiritual journey now. And that's why we're here. And I felt the same.
Yeah, so I'll maybe pick up from here. Thanks, Elena, for sharing this, and so much that resonates. I also was very deeply involved in different kind of spiritual seeking, and in very deep in the inner work and speaking, you know, in terms of the Wilbur's quadrants, very much in the left side quadrants, and especially in the upper left, you know, and there was so much, you know, self-indulgence and complacency and sense of, oh, how I'm growing up, and only later I discovered how much comfort I was seeking there, and the hiding place, you know, and this full-scale invasion, full-scale war, it gave us something that we usually call a kind of evolutionary kick in the pants, or slap in the face, you know, when the life is giving you that evolutionary kick, and that showed how much of real development and real self-discovery, and I would even say real healing. I'm not saying that we are not going through some new trauma. Of course we are, but in some senses we also go through integration and this, you know, traumatic growth, and in a sense this practice became more integral or more whole, you know, because we kind of connected the left hand quadrants and the right hand quadrants, and it took some time to make sense of it and to discover it. For the first probably 2 years of this full-scale war, I was still struggling inside. Okay, what is happening? Why all those previous practices are not working for me the way I was used to, and I expected them, you know, and yeah, now it's completely different. It became more real, more honest, more kind of action based, and I'm actually speaking a lot with my Zen master, that I don't know if you know, he's the founder of Integral Zen, Dzogchen Michael Nelson Roshi, and he's supporting me a lot in this experience, and He just recently said, I don't remember whose quote is what it was, but it comes from the World War II. There are no atheists in foxholes, something like that, you know. And when the bombs are and missiles and drones are exploding above your head, so your atheism, if even if it was there, it's evaporating so quickly. And Dana must remember those first nights at our place when there was these drone attacks and air raid sirens, and he literally saw those drones flying and being hit above, basically above Kyiv. And so again, we are coming back to this reinvention of spirituality, and there were so many paradigm shifts, and even like some of them really, really big ones, tectonic shifts. One of those was that, previously we would look at the Western part of the world, the kind of democratic Western part of the world, as role models, as examples to seek, and to mimic. So basically the US and the European Union countries, and we learn from them, and we try to, repeat those patterns. And then all of a sudden we realize that there are no more models, there are no best practice examples left. And especially recent days, unfortunately, what we experience what a mess is happening over there. So what happened to us? We suddenly realized that we are the adults in the room, and the first reaction was a shock. I'm not saying it in an arrogant way, that of course we have our shadows and we have our developmental needs, both individually and as a society. But basically, we realized that, yeah, we are the adults, and we have to fight for ourselves. We have to keep our agency. We have to take all the responsibility. There's not no one and nothing to kind of to seek, or okay, to delegate that responsibility to, and I would say that what is happening in Ukraine recently is the most powerful accelerator of growing up, generally, because we need to survive. Of course, we have some support from mostly from the European countries, but we need to do the dirty work here. And what helped me to come through this shift, were my clients, actually, my coaching clients. Because I mostly work with business executives and those people who are taking a lot of responsibility, the top managers of large organizations, including, by the way, the energy supplying to organization, the biggest one in Ukraine, which is being hit, which assets are being hit, and they're repairing those power plants overnight and doing really great work. And when working with those executives, what I saw that they are so focused and so real and so practical, and for some time, kind of, they for me they became kind of coaches, because they helped me to stabilize and to ground and to center in this practical, actionable, no kind of conversation on growth, development, and becoming more efficient. Yeah, and that was powerful. So for me, I would summarize it that it's more about being real, being honest, somewhat cynical, I would say, because that's part of our kind of modus operandi. Both cynical in terms of all those illusions that we had about the Western world and about democracy, about rule of law, about the world order, and anything. And we found that there's some level of healthy cynicism especially speaking about Ukrainian humor, which is super powerful and beautifully cynical. And you can't imagine, like, every time something happens. For example, when we had this, when Zelensky had this meeting at the Oval Office in February last year. So how many memes and how many jokes we had, like, instantly in minutes. So this is the healthy way of decompression, you know, of the tension in this society. And I see a lot of that in my coaching clients who, A, have a lot of responsibility. Their life is a nightmare. They have a lot of people, a lot of their employees in the army, you know, some of them wounded, some of them unfortunately even killed, and they have all the responsibility for, you know, supporting their families and so on. So they're going through some enormous, you know, burden of complexity and responsibilities. And at the same time, they're keeping this kind of healthy humor as the way to survive. Yeah, so I would say that we're learning from our clients a lot. I don't know if you've shared this experience, Elena, but this is not only, you know, the one-way street.
There's so much in what you shared that's so powerful, and brings up more questions. Like one question I'd love to ask there then is, so yeah, there you seems like there's a still a real need for coaching in these kinds of situations. And could you say more about that? Like there's an, you know, because I think sometimes I wonder, you know, when things break down in the way that, or, you know, there's this level of disruption that you're experiencing, you know, is that the end of coaching? You know, do people say, hey, well, that's a nice thing to have when things are good, but we can't do that right now. But it sounds like no, people are still seeing the need for coaching. And what kind of coaching is really helping people? And I think this leads to the, in general, I'm curious about, you know, what kind of practices, shared or individual, still feel relevant?
Elena, would you like to start?
No, go on.
Yeah, so I would say that this is mostly about the resilience and a healthy form of resilience. I definitely there is a need and demand for coaching, but it's kind of different. It's not that much about the I don't know how to say it without sounding too cynical and arrogant. This is not about, you know, fluffy muffy, let's speak about emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is even more important than before, but people want really to be very real and very practical, and usually my clients are not articulating their needs very clearly, so which means they usually are not aware of what they need, but they are coming with some, you know, some problems and complaints, usually that are connected to this, you know, being in the survival mode for too long and being in the burnout. And when we unpack it's usually ends in their ability to deal with that level of complexity and even chaos, being in contact with that, basically being aware of that and being in a healthy relationship with their ability or limits of their ability to be with that complexity, you know. So basically to become more real, to become better able to appreciate what they do, because usually there's this notion of, oh, there's nothing special, I'm just doing my work. But if you would basically show what that person has done over the last, I don't know, 1 or 2 or 3 years, I would say that would sound really impressive for any business executive in any Western country, and so on. And being more basically, it's again about more about self-empathy in many ways, not only psychologically, but also somatically, kind of taking better care of themselves. And often it's about allowing, basically giving the right to take care of themselves, because they are seeing so much suffering and they're carrying so much burden of responsibility for so many people. So in that context, having a break or taking care of themselves may seem very, undeserved. So basically what I'm doing a lot is helping them calibrate their frames of reference and appreciate what they do, and really take care of themselves. And from there we can go into kind of leadership effectiveness topics, different competences, and so on. But this is the base level, I would say.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, Elena, what how about you?
Yeah, I just want to add a few things to this. I agree with most of the things that Vitas has just shared, and it's just those I've worked both with the Ukrainians in Ukraine and outside of Ukraine, and of course those who women who decided to move out, they have other challenges of integrating to this life and also like disattaching themselves from their past, basically to move on. But for those who stay in Ukraine, it's I guess the first year and a half probably we were all very focused on this common goal, and it was really hard to start thinking outside of this collective effort. But then the life goes on, and we just started integrating this altered context into our life and started living a new life where this big war is part of our context continuously. And then the next challenge was to integrate continuous disruptions, the chaos, which is ongoing, compared to chaos, which comes and goes. That one is unpredictable. But one thing is for sure, it will come back once they invent new weapons or if Trump stops supplying our air defense missiles like he did over this winter, and we just can't hit their targets and we're in a new chaos. So we have to integrate that into our realities. And once people learn to live with it, obviously they started having questions about their life. So they had to hold those two polarities, the outer context and their lives. And of course, they would have the same questions. Leaders would want to be better leaders. Women would want to have, and obviously would want to have better relationships with their partners, et cetera, et cetera. But it is all together with that outer context. And I agree with Vitas that when so much is going on, and I don't know about you, but I often hear much bigger challenges, and who am I compared to that?
We just lost you a bit there, Elena. Could you say that last sentence again?
Right. So apart from the outer context, there is or there was a comparison to our superheroes at the front lines, where there was a little bit of this diminishing of my personal effort to just actually continue going on in this life of being a leader and helping them to get them. And as to the practices, I've been mulling it over as we were thinking about the spirituality, but I will park it for now. But as to the practices, I would say on my personal level and with my clients and with the groups that I've been working with, since this context puts us into a very interesting, I would say, tribal position where instead of being in the 21st century, or rather being in the 21st century with AI and robots and so on, at the same time, all of those attempts and the war itself, so carnal, brings back the pastimes and the techniques which worked for us as humans. It makes us so human on the very deep carnal level that getting together around the fire, telling our stories, sharing the shit which is going on in our lives, and I'm speaking metaphorically, but actually physically as well. My best practice has been getting together with my Gen Z neighbor and just talking about all of those little challenges that we're facing with electricity and heating, and then laughing out loud about that. To me, this is tribal, but also you mentioned Deb Dana in the beginning of our conversation. Don't know if it's in the recording or not, but I came to know polyvagal theory in 2023 on a very deep level, and then I got training in trauma release exercises, which is intertwined with polyvagal theory. And last year, I also certified in PVT. And one idea from the polyvagal theory, which I took a retreat in France and then was going back to Kyiv, and I was so afraid to do that. And then just hearing about this very basic thing, like social engagement, the social, the ventral system, right? That in the vagus nerve, which is inbuilt into our bodies. That's why I'm speaking about carnal, how carnal this context is. It's like we have a system inside of our bodies how to co-regulate with others in the face of horrible, horrible danger, so as not to take the trauma in. And it's just going out there, talking to people, laughing, smiling, looking to other people's eyes, if possible, hugging, just having little conversations so that this outer pressure stops pumping out of our system. It's interesting that this danger, it's not going anywhere until the war is over, but we can create those small islands of from the polyvagal theory that we can build those small social connections. In 2023, I realized that instead of being this strong woman who uses her all of her mental health techniques to breathe and stay at home in her bathroom in between two walls when there are drones and missiles, I realized that now I would rather live through the discomfort of going down, taking the elevator, and going down to the bomb shelter, which is basically a parking space underneath our house, and look at other people and ask them around what they read in the news, just look into the eyes. And last summer, I have had the first, the funniest and the most existential experience probably of my life. Last summer was really hard in a different way than May 2025. Russians started hitting Kyiv every night. What it means is that if before we used to have like one attack, maybe two attacks per week, so you would have 3 to 7 days in between attacks where you can decompress, sleep, and prepare for the next attack. Since May, they started hitting us every single night. That was very harsh because your brain just can't wrap itself around, and there is no time to decompress. So, but I was using my technique from the PVT, and I was going down to the parking space, and we have a small patio and a covered entrance to this parking space. And there were several young people gathering together because we all have Telegram channel, and we know when the missiles come, when the Shahed comes. But basically, for there were so many Shaheds because they were using like 200s per night for Kyiv, that's a lot. Just to give you reference, normal attack is 10 to 20. We have 200 per night. That's a lot. So we could hear Shaheds, and we were able to discern by the sound whether it's near and we should hide in the parking lot, or it's far away. And it was, you know, it will sound crazy, but it was so much fun standing there with that group of young people and tracking the Telegram channels and like saying to each other, oh, it's not near. Oh, don't be afraid. Or probably we should hide or something like that. I even got invited to a concert by one of them later in the morning after the attack. But that's what we do.
Oh, that's so
Wow.
touching. Dana, do you want to add anything here?
Yeah, I know we're getting close to all, but I just wanted to underline, this theme of how the context that they're living in, so it accelerates not just innovation, but living and embodying these practices. Like to be with Elena when she takes people through the Kinevan framework and walks people from complex to complicated to chaos, it's so embodied and it's so in her and real that it's unlike doing it somebody who's just been through a training. And I marvel too at Vitas. I've known you more than 15 years. And I would say before the war, you were more defended. Since the war, you've become undefended and more vulnerable and open-hearted. Who's to think a war you're supposed to get more defended? You've gotten more, you become more embodied in your heart or more dropped into your heart.
Do you want to say,
Anyway.
Dana, that I was reactive?
Not you.
How dare you?
Yeah, so anyway, you can see I love these guys and I love what I've learned from them and been inspired by them, and it's very, very touching.
Thank you, Dana. I would like to add a couple of things, Joel, if you don't
Please.
mind, and because it's unwrapping, and there are so many layers to this experience, living in this war context. And what really opened up for me, not on the theoretical level, but on a very real level, all this somatic work. So I was not deep into that. So Yelena was focusing on that even before the full-scale war, and that was part of her kind of practice and professional offering. For me, that was something more like theoretical. Of course, I knew I appreciated that on a theoretical level. I was also doing some somatic practices, but that was not the big thing, frankly speaking, to me. And from the moment I heard the first missile explosions, the real missile, the big ones, and the first time I heard it, and I heard it not with my ears, I heard it with my body. It's instantly changed, kind of. I just realized that whatever bravery or courage or whatever I imagined I had, it was gone in the moment, kind of thing. Because then I found out that that explosion was around 3 kilometers away from the place I was, and I still remember that, kind of. This real somatic sense of how your instinctual part, your very, reptile part, and is reacting to those explosions, you cannot deceive yourself, kind of. It's so real. And basically, from that moment, this new super important part of human development and practice opened up, and I started working with it much more in my coaching. So basically, I needed to experience that through my body, realize how important that was. And unfortunately, many of my clients, they are still not really aware of this connection, because they're going through a lot of difficult experiences and a lot of traumatic experience, but not connecting that through through their bodies. That was a big shift. And reflecting on what Yelena was saying, again, if we look at those leaders, and not necessarily business, any kind of leaders, and by the way, a lot of leaders did not realize they had this capacity in them, but the circumstances helped them, unfold as leaders, and sometimes they get even offended when they refer to them as leaders. Like, what? What kind of leader? I'm just doing what I can. So when you observe them, so in the same day, they can be engaged in the really complex, mature, systemic kind of work, even strategic kind of work, really trying to invent something incredibly new, to rethink some systems, some social government, I don't know, business systems, and so on. And at the same time, they can be deeply engaged in very kind of, if we speak in terms of spiral dynamics, beige and purple kind of level, and be real in that. So what I witnessed, this span from beige and purple into the second tier, and again in all the levels in between. For me, that seems so impressive. And sometimes it's important for those leaders to really recognize that, appreciate that, and make sense of it, because people are doing this pretty naturally without putting too much importance on that work. So we have a lot to offer, and so many leadership practices that are really are born here every day. And I think that there's the next phase of our work will be to kind of to make sense of it, and to pack it, and to offer it to the rest of the world, because now we are too much engaged in the practice here.
Yeah, that's I was thinking that it's so powerful. I know we're at time. Do you have each of you like another 5, 6 minutes? Because I'd just love to ask one question to end with, and maybe even 10 minutes. I mean,
No problem with it.
it's just so moving, on so many levels to hear what's happening there and how people are responding. It's hard to speak into how much it touches me and to how it touches me and how and the learnings that are happening. It's really moving. But one question I have is what, and it kind of gets to what you just said, Vitas, there, which is what invitation would you make to the coaches listening to this? And maybe an answer to that already. I'm trying to be more specific. It's like, but like if I look at the Ukraine, yeah, the intensity there. Now, hopefully, we're not going to experience war everywhere around the world, but it seems like things are breaking down. There's intensity. There's going to be disruptive events happening around the world potentially. So, what invitation would you make for coaches to be a coach who can support people in these times? And that's a huge question, and we could talk about that for a full, and maybe we do a part two and talk about that. But the headlines, like if you could put it in a few sentences, and I this is to you, Dana, as well. Like what invitation would you make to coaches around the world?
So if I may start, I would say that the simple and practical invitation would be to please come and visit us in Ukraine during this war. That Dana did in September 2024. And it's still, I cannot say it's fully safe. It's war there, of course. We cannot guarantee anything here for even for ourselves, but it's relatively safe. So basically, you can, and it's a very civilized country, safe in terms of general situation on the streets. You can easily walk in the evening, and of course, you should be aware of those those dangers and air raids and so on. But the infrastructure is there, the support is there. A lot of foreigners are already coming back, and a lot of them are, visiting. So it's not something too exotically dangerous. And you can witness and see and observe and share experiences with local to really learn a lot and to make sense of so many things in new ways and get connected to this kind of, what I call more real world, less self kind of deceptive, or to see some of your blind spots. And this environment here, including the people that can create that support, and we have been hosting a lot of people coming, a lot of our friends coming from Western countries. So I would like to extend this invitation. If someone would be really interested, let's just get in touch with us, and we'll think what we can, how we can support that, and how we can even contribute.
Yeah.
So I would summarize with that, and I don't know, maybe Dana, as the someone who has experienced that, first person perspective, can could share something.
I think it's both an accurate and a very generous invitation, Vitas. And it's a transformational invitation. And being in Ukraine for the first time in 2015 really planted that made the connection and planted the seeds. But then to come with a group and to meet so many Ukrainians and to live, only for a week, but to be in your space, to be with your family, to be walking with a group and there's sirens that go off, and well, let's go down in the little cafe and have a coffee, and then we come back out. And there's something about the transformation through my cells of being there. That so I think it's a beautiful invitation, and it's been profound for me. And if you can't come to the Ukraine, I almost want to pass the ball to Elena to see how. I feel sometimes at a loss to connect people to that experience and to how Ukraine lives in me, because it's come so much through my relationship with these two and others, but also being there. But I also read the Key of Independent every morning, and I look to see what are the things that are happening in Ukraine that I want to financially support. And what are the things to let people know about? So I'm in that inquiry right now. I feel a little bit of a loss for other answers. I pass it to Elena.
Thank you both. I mean, Peter, I think it's a great idea and a great invitation. And by the way, there are quite safe places, like somewhere in the Transcarpathian region where no missiles, or at least maybe one in 4 years, try to hit them. So they're almost completely safe to travel to. But of course, in order to experience what Peter and I were sharing, you had to go to Kyiv or Odessa or Kyiv. Anyways, a few takeaways for the coaches. Probably, I will start with, I think I will start with nature. If you haven't developed your relationship with nature, start doing it now to be a better resource, both for yourself and for your coaches. Because something that there, it is something that will both ground you. It will be something that will transmit this eternal love to you, higher vibrational force into you when you are immersed into chaos. Yes, there is human love, love for my country, love for my people. But if you have been in spiritual traditions, you would need to go into some space where you would find yourself connected with this higher self. And in the middle of danger, there is no way you can fully switch your mind off. A part of me is all, as soon as I cross the border, I can feel it in my body, even if I'm sleeping on the train. I know something is different. The vibration is different. You are on alert 24/7. And it means that you can't fully go in and go into some of your spiritual practices full speed. So nature is a source of that, a safe source of that. Another thing, it's become trauma informed. If you haven't become yet, learn about trauma and stress and how it accumulates in your body and how the amount of stress and the length of stress you're undergoing through is affecting your body, your thinking even. Then actually complexity work, context work, the Kunevin map were extremely helpful to me. I don't know about you, Vitas, but I kept on thinking how we're sliding in between chaos and complexity. And even on my little individual level, how as soon as I learn how to manage electricity issues, it becomes a simple and obvious domain. Some of the things are still kept in complexity and complicated. And there is always imminent chaos, as I mentioned earlier. So it helps just to process things faster. On the adult development side, I kept watching myself and us as a collective, how we collapse, like how my mind just slides back when there is a situation of imminent danger and imminent crisis, and I have to process it. And usually in my pre-war context, I would be extremely judgmental about myself, and I would start trying to drag myself out of that habit of thinking. But the war taught me that you have to tackle the priority things first. So my priority is, well, the survival, basically. So I would not judge myself if I slide down on this scale of adult development, or if you have other hierarchies of development, you might witness that too. I guess last but definitely not the least, everything about the body, embodiment rocks in the situations of war. Not only about trauma, but actually once you have experienced attack, anything that you can do with your body, shaking, dancing, running. I run a lot, and dance a lot when I'm in Ukraine, because that helps to discharge the stress. It's a continuous danger which builds up cortisol in your bodies. And we all know that it leads to deterioration of all the bodily functions, and actually your brain functions worse with that. So you need to learn how to discharge that. And also through co-regulation, but Vita spoke about it beautifully.
And I'd like to add one more thing, Joel, if you don't mind. Just if we kind of address it to our colleagues, coaches, and most of your audience is in the Western countries, of course. The wisdom that we learned very deeply here, and it's not you, it's us all, as the world, about the polarity between love and power. Because one thing that we experienced a lot, including, from very famous and respected public intellectuals in the West, that were, inviting in the beginning that for pure pacifism and okay, make peace with Russia and stop war, and including the invitations for, Western countries, stop feeding Ukraine with weapons, like bringing it up as something very spiritual. So what we learned that, pacifism sometimes can kill. And our friends even wrote a famous article, and I don't actually remember in which magazine, that pacifism kills. But what I want to really point to is that love is not enough. Unfortunately, love needs teeth. Love needs fists. You need to be able to protect yourself. You need to be able to protect your families, your values, your country. And this polarity, love doesn't work without power. And this famous quote by Martin Luther King Jr. that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. So this one thing, I think there's so much need, especially in the this coaching community, and I would say the inner work kind of circles, to remember that we need power, and we need to reclaim our power.
It's so
Wow.
beautiful. Can I say one last piece? Because
Please, yeah,
just
and then we have to end, but because this is such a big topic that we're opening up, is a really good one as well. And I'm like,
but
oh, so we'll
we
do
need
part
to do
two.
the
Elena,
second
please.
Last thing from me, it's listening to Vita's. I would say that a challenge like this requires you to be a more complex human being on all the levels that you can imagine. And the more you develop yourself, the better you are prepared. And not to diminish the importance of an inner child, there is a difference between having your inner child inbuilt and being childish and infantile about things, including geopolitics. I think we have matured as a nation looking at those big, or used to be big, personas and countries in our countries who failed us multiple times. And instead of being a child crying in a corner, we braced up ourselves, we took the weapons, and we continued protecting ourselves, surviving, and sometimes even thriving. So develop yourselves.
I love that you said that. What a great way to end.
There's
Thank
such big
you.
topics, such powerful learnings and important topics. I wish we had time to unpack them further, but we don't. And I just want to share my gratitude for all of you on the call. I'm really, like I said, I'm really touched and learning a lot, learning so much, and I actually come away feeling really and so inspired, even though it's, such a, to say that about something like war seems kind of crazy, but there was to be so inspired by the response of yourselves and the people of Ukraine. So thank you, Elena, Vitas, and Dana. And maybe just quickly, you could say, if people want to reach out to you after this, I don't know if you want that. If, Vitas, you said, if you want to come visit, let me know. Where can people find you or find your work?
Usual channels: Facebook, LinkedIn. I have a personal website, which is buchunas.com, my surname.com, but now it's usually not a problem.
Yeah, same with me. I'm still developing my website, but I have a page on cultivating leadership website, and I will share my contact details. I will be happy to reflect if somebody wants to reach out with questions, or if you dare to come to safer parts of Ukraine. I think Peters and I, we can think about something. And
Sure.
Dana, he wants to contribute.
Maybe a Coaches Rising group. Yeah.
Maybe.
That
And
would be
Dana,
wonderful.
do you want
That
to,
would be.
Dana, point us to how people can
Yeah,
contact you?
DanaCarmenIntegral.com and at Wayfinding Horizons Leadership.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.